freedom of speech.
Our dangers and our opportunities.
This is our challenge, and this is our time.
It really is a revolution.
To do that to a child is to ultimately hurt the child's own feelings and thoughts about himself.
Following the Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt divorce case, the judge called out Angelina Jolie's behavior in regards to her actively interfering with the kids' time with their father. In one interview, Alec Baldwin described his own experience and used the term parental alienation. Today we sit down with Dr. Amy Baker, who is a nationally recognized author and expert in parent-child relationships and emotional abuse of children.
Episode 3, Part 1.
Parental alienation is a family dynamic in which a parent engages in behaviors that can foster a child's unjustified rejection of the other parent. So we say that a child is alienated when that child has been exposed to those alienation behaviors and comes to have false and distorted thoughts and feelings about the other parent, so that the child experiences a parent who the child formerly loved and had a close relationship with as unsafe, unloving, and unavailable.
Is parental alienation harmful to children? And if so, in what ways?
Yeah, so it's really bad news. It's one of the worst things that a parent can do to a child. Because when a parent turns a child against the other parent, so let's say the dad turns the kids against mom, such that the kids think that mom is unsafe, unloving, unavailable, when that's not true. To do that to a child is to ultimately hurt the child's own feelings and thoughts about himself. So one thing I say is to turn a child against a parent is to turn a child against himself. And that's because kids identify with their parents. So if mom convinces Johnny that dad is bad and stupid and wrong and everything dad does is contemptuous or dad wanted to hurt him, if mom does that to Johnny, then Johnny will ultimately feel like there's something wrong with him. He'll think, if my dad is bad and garbage, then I must be garbage too. And then the little kid will think, well, if dad doesn't love me, it's because I'm unlovable. So when parents engage in these behaviors to make a child unnecessarily angry and hurt at the other parent, they are, in effect, damaging the child. And I've done lots of research studies on this particular point about the long-term negative consequences of alienation. And the studies show consistently that exposure to alienation behaviors is associated with depression later in life for these kids and low self-esteem and difficulties trusting people, difficulties becoming self-sufficient, difficulties having mature attachments in their adult romantic relationships. It affects many aspects of their functioning.
Are there warning signs of parental alienation for people that spend more time with the kids, such as friends, neighbors, teachers, family members?
That is a great question. And let me start by saying that there's warning signs for the parents themselves. In other words, it doesn't happen where, let's say, dad says to a kid, I know you think your mom's great, but by tomorrow, I'm going to make you hate her. Alienation doesn't happen overnight. And that means that there are warning signs that even the parent themselves, who's the victim of alienation, if more parents understood what those warning signs are, then parents would be able to defend themselves and inoculate their kids or go back to court and try to stop it or parent differently. But too often what happens is a parent might say to a friend or a teacher or a guidance counselor or a coach or their own family, you know, I think my ex is turning the kids against me. My kids are acting like I'm this, you know, villain, this bad guy all the time, and something's wrong. And too often, the friends and neighbors and support network of a parent will say, oh, you know, you're such a good mom. You could never lose your kids. Don't worry. The kids will figure it out. And that is really bad advice because it is possible for good parents to lose a relationship with their kid because the other parent manipulated the child. So the first sort of message that I would give to somebody who's not a parent but interacts with parents and kids is that if a parent tells you that they're worried that the other parent is turning their child against them, to listen to that parent and don't minimize it, and don't assume that good parents can't lose their kids because of alienation. What I would say that a teacher, a guidance counselor, a coach, or friend, or neighbor, or family member should say is, that sounds like it could be serious. Why don't you consult with an alienation expert to find out what you can do about it? Because best case scenario, the parent is off the mark and it's not really alienation, and then they'll learn. And if it is alienation, maybe they can catch it before it's too late. So now I'm going to try to answer the more specific question you had, which is, what can friends and neighbors and people who interact with a parent, what can they do if they see the warning signs and what those warning signs might be? So the warning signs are kind of twofold. One is behaviors of a parent, and the other is the behaviors of a child. So if you are in contact with a family and you see that one parent is undermining and interfering in the kid's relationship with the other parent, you know, you could step in and say something like, hey, you know, I know you look like a great dad and you love your kids, but I think you might be engaging in alienation and maybe you need to do something about this. You know, you could not be a silent witness, but actually an enlightened witness, somebody who can say, I think I'm seeing something that's a problem. Or maybe to say, hey, mom, you know, I've heard dad badmouth the kids, you know, badmouth you to the kids. I think you should know that this is what's happening, rather than saying, oh, I have, you know, this isn't my problem, I'm going to step out of it. Likewise, if you interact with kids, a warning sign that alienation is happening would be if the kids start to lack ambivalence. If they start to say things like, you know, my dad is perfect, I worship him, it's my mother, she's, you know, terrible, she's garbage. When a kid starts to see one parent is all good and the other parent is all bad, that's when you likely or possibly have alienation going on, because it's really unnatural. Kids are able, even young kids, to see good and bad in both parents. So I would say that would be sort of the number one warning sign that alienation might be happening. Another warning sign is if you see kids treating their parent really badly and almost in an adult contemptuous way. So if a child says to a teacher, oh, my mom is such an idiot, I've given her so many chances, you know, she just can't get it right. You know, in this kind of haughty, arrogant, pseudo-mature tone of voice, that's a sign that something's wrong in the family, because children don't normally look down on their parents, even really imperfect parents, unless the other parent is putting them up to it.
Are there patterns, or I want to say the word, strategy for parents trying to alienate their kids?
Well, the research shows that there are 17 behaviors that are examples of the kinds of behaviors that a parent could engage in that could foster the child's unjustified rejection of the other parent. So yes, those are the behaviors that newly divorcing parents should learn about so that they don't do them. Like, oh, that's an alienation strategy, I better not do that because I don't want to be an alienator. And they should learn about them, so that if they get a sense that the other parent is doing those things, that they are forewarned. Too often, what I find is that parents come to me for coaching and they say, you know, my kid hasn't spoken to me in 6 months. And I, well, let's go back in time, tell me the story. And then what's very clear is that the alienation had been going on for quite some time and the parents didn't recognize the relationship They didn't connect the dots. They said, oh, yeah, my ex refers to me by first name. And, yeah, my ex never gave me the kid's telephone. And that means, you know, telephone number. So I can't reach them when we're apart. But they didn't realize that these 17 behaviors can induce a child to reject a parent who doesn't deserve to be rejected.
For kids who have experienced parental alienation and don't know it, looking back on their lives, if possible, what questions can they ask themselves to understand if they experience parental alienation?
Well, for one thing, they could look back and see whether the four-factor model of parental alienation applies to their situation. In other words, when a child rejects a parent, we don't know if that child is alienated or not. The way we can tell is by seeing if all four factors of the four-factor model are in place. Factor one is prior positive relationship between the child and the now rejected parent. Factor two is absence of abuse or neglect on the part of the now rejected parent. Factor three is that the favored parent engaged in those 17 behaviors I was just talking about. And factor four is that the child himself exhibited 8 behaviors that are unique to alienation. If I were talking to a 30-year-old who had no relationship with, let's say, dad, and had a, you know, what he thought was a very good relationship with mom, and the child wanted to know, well, was I alienated from dad, or did I have a good reason to cut him off when I was 15 years old and the judge gave me a choice and I took the choice of never seeing my dad? How could I know if I were alienated? Well, the kid could go back and look at whether those four factors apply. Did I used to have a good relationship with my dad? Did my dad do something like abuse or neglect me that would cause me to cut him off? Did my mom engage in these 17 behaviors that research shows can foster a child to reject a parent? And did I myself exhibit these 8 behaviors? But the other thing is, if you have, let's say, a 30-year-old who has no relationship with the parent, I think a question that he could ask himself is, what would happen if I picked up the phone and called, let's say dad is the parent he's cut off from. If I called my father today and said, hey, dad, I know we haven't talked in 10 years, but I would like to have a conversation with you. What would happen? How do I think my dad would respond? And how do I think my mom would respond? And if it's alienation, the kid would say, well, my mom would probably cut me off if I had contact with my dad. And I think my dad would be very hurt, but happy to hear from me. So that would sort of be consistent with alienation. On the other hand, if the 30-year-old said, you know, my mom has told me she wants me to have a good relationship with my dad. I think she'd really support it and be okay. But my dad probably would hang up on me. That would be a clue that it might not be alienation. Of course, the proof would be in the pudding. He could simply do it. He could try to reach out to the parent he had cut off and see what happens.
Why would a parent do this to their children and to the other parent?
So, you know, people ask that consistently. And my sort of general answer is, I don't know and I don't care. And I don't mean it as sort of bluntly as I'm putting it. But I think it's very hard to know the motivations of other people. I think it's hard to know our own motivations. So to try to guess what somebody else's motivation is almost impossible. And on some level, it doesn't matter. What matters is their behavior. And so having said that, all I can tell you is that clinicians who have written about this, and I've done my own, you know, writing about this, as a researcher, it's a range of reasons. Some do it because they're angry and they want to punish the other parent. Some do it because they're vulnerable and they simply don't want to be alone. They're not used to the kids being with the other parent. Their primary relationship is through their kids, not through their spouse. The way that they get most of their gratification and pleasure and focus is on the kids, and they simply don't want to be separated from the kids. You know, many parents, their primary identification is through their children's achievements. So I feel good about myself when my child, you know, gets a goal in soccer or the star of the, you know, the school show or whatever. And it's hard to kind of move away from that. So those are just two examples of motivations, but there are probably others. And, you know, another question that people ask me on the same lines is, do alienating parents know what they're doing? Are they doing it on purpose? And again, I would say it's hard to know why people do what they do and whether they're conscious of their own motivations. And it seems that there's a range. There's the overt alienating parents who say things like, I'm going to turn the kids against you. So clearly, they're doing it on purpose. And then there are others who probably aren't aware consciously of what they're doing, but have tricked themselves into believing that it's best for the kids.
Building on that last question, are there personality disorders related to parental alienation?
Yes, absolutely. It's the cluster B personality disorders, which is sociopathy, borderline, and narcissism. And basically what these have in common, other than a disregard for other people's feelings, which is essential for alienation, right? Because they're disregarding the feelings of the other parent, it's an inability to recognize that the children have a separate experience than they have. So sort of the typical, a narcissistic mother gets divorced from the dad who rejected her. Let's say he had an affair or he lost interest in her. So the marriage ends. She feels insulted, right? She's been replaced and discarded. That nobody likes that. That does not feel good. And what a narcissistic person would do is then devalue the other person. So rather than saying, my feelings are hurt because my husband doesn't find me desirable or interesting anymore, that really is painful. What they say is something like, well, he's a jerk and he's no good and I should have gotten rid of him a long time ago, right? So they end up devaluing that other person. And once they do that, they can't imagine that the kids would see any value because the narcissism, for example, means that it's very hard to take the perspective of another person because they experience their perspective as the only valid perspective. That's sort of essential to narcissism, is this belief that their perspective is the right one. And so a mother who was insulted and rejected by her ex and then turns around and devalues him says to herself, why would the kids want to see him? He has nothing to offer them, because she's conflating her rejection of her husband with assuming the kids would want to reject him as well. So that's just one way that it happens.
In your lectures and books, you describe parental alienation as being a syndrome. Can it be a syndrome?
I no longer use the term syndrome because it's such a lightning rod for controversy. But here's the answer. The American Psychiatric Association defines a syndrome as a collection of signs and symptoms with an underlying etiology, meaning there's one cause for all the symptoms that you're seeing. Or let's say, but you can imagine a medical condition where you have lots of different symptoms, but it's the same underlying problem that's causing the runny nose and the cough and the itchy eyes and whatever, right? So we used to call parental alienation a syndrome because the underlying etiology was the behaviors of the favored parent that are causing eight behaviors in the child, all of which go together. And that's why it was originally called a syndrome. The problem is twofold. One is there are numerous articles out there that say it's not a syndrome. And interestingly, they misquote the American Psychiatric Association. They give the wrong definition of syndrome and then say, therefore, parental alienation can't be a syndrome. And it's created a lot of confusion, so it's easier to just not call it a syndrome. The other thing is, it is not in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual as a separate syndrome. So in some respects, you could say it's not proper at this point to call it a syndrome. What the American Psychiatric Association decided to do is to subsume alienation as a type of child affected by parental relationship distress, which is a new diagnostic category put into the DSM-5. And the authors of the DSM-5 who wrote that new diagnosis, child affected by parental relationship distress, they wrote a paper that's been peer-reviewed and published that says, here are three examples of what this new diagnosis is, and one of the examples they give is parental alienation. So the people who created the DSM felt that that was the right place for parental alienation as an example of this bigger problem.
How can alienated parents talk to the school, guidance counselors, and other professionals surrounding their kids when they think parental alienation is happening?
Yes, so I think the first question would be, what would be the purpose of bringing it up? In other words, I think that a parent would have to think very carefully about why they were bringing it up. In other words, if it's parent-teacher conference and Johnny isn't doing his homework, and the teacher saying, you know, Mrs. Baker, your son isn't doing his homework, I think bringing up parental alienation in that context would be wholly inappropriate. On the other hand, if let's say the guidance counselor calls in a parent and says, I think your child's depressed, then you might say, well, here's what I think is going on. But I think in general, there's no good reason for a parent to make an appointment with a teacher or a guidance counselor to say, I think my ex is, engaging in alienation. There's not much the teacher could do, and often they do sort of think that's bad mouthing. In a way, you look like an alienator simply by bringing it up. But I think that if you did bring it up, you would have to have a purpose in mind. What are you asking something of the teacher? Is there something you want them to do? Because that's not really that's not really their role. That being said, if there's a purpose to it, I think that the language you could use is one of the following. You could either say, I think my kid's caught in a loyalty conflict. I think my kid's having a hard time loving and feeling loved by both the other parent and me. And then maybe, again, I don't know why somebody would bring that up to a teacher or guidance counselor, but if you had a good reason, that would be one way to do it. If you want to be a little bolder, you could say, I think the other parent is undermining and interfering in my relationship with my kid. But again, there would have to be a pretty good reason to do it.
For parents going through parental alienation, is all hope lost? Can anything be done to help?
Well, it really depends on where they are in the process. In other words, if you're just getting divorced and you're worried about it, but it hasn't happened yet, then there's a bunch of things you could do to protect yourself from being falsely or, for having your child be falsely upset with you or become alienated from you. So there's prevention things you can do. Then there's a whole bunch of things you can do if it's already starting, but it hasn't really gotten too severe and you still have a pretty good relationship with your kid. If it's much, much further down the road and your kid has rejected you, let's say you have a 14-year-old who's simply not coming and, obviously, you would have to see whether you had the time and the money and the resources to go to court and get a custody evaluation and try to convince the court that this is alienation so that you could get an alienation-specific intervention. If that's not a possibility, there are still things that targeted parents can do if their kids have completely rejected them and they've decided that they don't want to go down the road of courts, and it mostly involves strategic and appropriate interactions. Texting, if you have the kid's cell phone number, there's lots of kind of mistakes that targeted parents make that I address in my coaching or in some of my books about the kinds of things you should and should not be doing to reach out to your kids. The bottom line, if your kid's severely alienated, let's say, and you don't have the money for court, or your kids are too old, or you've already lost in court, the bottom line is to never give up, never stop trying to reach out, because you never know when your kid will want to come back to you. And once your kid turns 18, then, although people feel like, oh my God, this is the worst thing because now the courts can't do anything. It can be a good thing if your kid goes off to college and they're not living in the same home as the favored parent. You can try a very, very strategic letter that I help people write. It's different than any kind of letter that anybody else would write. It has all of these different elements that are designed to activate the child's attachment to you and to reignite their interest in a relationship. So there are things that people can do sort of no matter what stage of the process you're at.
What is your experience and how did you get into this field?
I have a PhD in developmental psychology from Teachers College of Columbia University, and I am primarily a researcher. And in addition to being a researcher, I'm also an author. I have 8 books on parental alienation, and I also am a parent coach. So I do telephone coaching sessions to help parents understand their parental alienation dynamic, where they are in the process, and helping them develop more effective strategies for interacting with their kids. And I also do some expert witness work. So I travel around the country educating courts about parental alienation. And I also do trainings. I do a lot of workshops and trainings over the course of every year of judges or attorneys or therapists, guidance counselors. I got into alienation because it is a form of child abuse, and that is my subspecialty. So I'm a developmental psychologist. My specialty is social emotional development and relationships between parents and kids. My subspecialty is child abuse. And one of the things that I found out when I first started hearing about parental alienation, just in the course of my general work, was that there's very little, and certainly that was true 15 years ago, there's very little known about the impact of alienation on kids. And I conducted my first study by interviewing adults who had this experience when they were kids. And I really wanted to hear from them, what did this mean to you? How did this affect you in your life? And for most researchers, every study answers some questions, but identifies new questions. And so it just became, each study just followed the next and laid the groundwork for the next. And so here I am 15 years later, still doing work in this field. But I also have other fields. I do a lot of work in foster care, and I do a lot of work in the field of psychological maltreatment, definitions, and outcomes. So I have other subspecialties as well.
Is parental alienation exclusive to divorce situations?
Divorce is one context for alienation. So it's more likely that alienation happens in divorce than, say, an intact marriage. But not all divorcing families involve alienation. And sometimes alienation actually happens when the people are still married. So alienation is a subset of a family dynamic that's common in divorce, but can also happen in intact families. And just to say it again, alienation is when a parent engages in behaviors that can cause a child to have distorted thoughts and feelings about the other parent.